script that I read from, so we can be a little bit more relaxed tonight. If we can all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So welcome to the Titan Center. We don't have a lot of night meetings, but it's been nice to spread our wings a little bit. Right now we'll have public comment. Any member of the public wishing to address the committee may do so for up to 3 minutes. If you approach the mic, please state your name clearly for the record. Don't all rush. All righty.
Can we get a chance later?
Yes, we will have another public comment.
Maybe we'll do some
comment then. Okay. So, tonight with us is Stacy Byers from Sheridan Land Consulting, and she's going to give us a presentation on the Berry County Farmland Preservation Ordinance.
Thank you, Heather. If it's okay, I think I will. Can everybody hear me all right if I speak up here? And then that way I can talk to everybody. So I apologize. You guys might have to wrench around a little to see the presentation, but... Can everybody hear me okay? If I don't have the mic, I'll project. I'm an auctioneer's daughter, so I should be able to do that pretty well. All right. Well, it was really funny. I was talking this right before we got here with Vivian and Heather about hearing loss, and it reminded me of a story that I want to share with you, and that is I had a friend who was really concerned about his wife's hearing. It was something that had been going on for a while. He'd noticed little things here and there, but hadn't really addressed it. And thought the one day that he came home from work and he thought it was really getting bad, and I really need to figure this out and we need to do something. So he walks in the door and says, "Hi, honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" And he waits and listens and he doesn't hear anything. So he walks in a little further and says, "Hi, honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" And he still doesn't hear anything. So as he's approaching the kitchen where he knows his wife is cooking, he knows that her hearing is pretty bad. And he walks right up to her behind her and is like, "Hi, honey, I'm home. What's for dinner?" And she turns around to him and says, "For the third time, chicken." So don't we sometimes think of that, where we look at somebody else as it's their problem, when really... we need to look at ourselves and what we can do. If we see a challenge or if there's something we want to see in our community, what can we do to create and make that change? And I think this issue of land use, farmland preservation, open space preservation really gets to the heart of what can we do as a community to create the best Berry County we can have? And what can we do to make this fit for what the needs of the Berry County residents are? So tonight, I want to share with you just a few slides to talk a little bit about farmland and open space preservation. I'll back up just a little bit to give you a bit of background on myself. My name is Stacy Byers. I have been working on farmland preservation issues since about 1998. It was the first time I started working on farmland preservation when I was an intern at the Michigan Farm Bureau. And we did the ultimate farmland preservation tours. So I've been working on this for a little bit of time. And in that time, I've gone around and helped about 20 counties, some townships, set up their farmland preservation ordinances. So currently, I own a consulting company, and I am the director for the Ingham County Farmland and Open Space Preservation Program. You probably saw some of the pamphlets and flyers that I brought just to share some information, give a little bit of context of some of the other programs that are going on. But I also help administer Kent County's program as well. So I have just a little bit of information and some experience I want to share with you. But really what I think tonight is about is having a discussion about what we want to see happen with this county. Guess we need to go down rather than up. So farmland preservation in Michigan. Although this feels like a relatively new concept, it's actually a concept that's been around for quite some time. It's simply new to Michigan. In the early 70s, we saw legislation in Michigan that established farmland preservation, and it allowed the state of Michigan to administer 14 day. This is the PDR, or the Purchase and Development Rights Program, or the Purchase of Conservation Easements Program, which is, I will talk a little bit more about that. But we saw this trend coming in the 70s and in the 80s, where it was the rise of the subdivision, where we saw this mass exodus from the cities. Everybody wanted their piece of the land. Development was booming. Subdivisions were going up right and left, and we all of a sudden found ourselves in this situation where we needed to say, what are we doing about our ag land? What is this doing to our farmland when we're seeing these countryside being carved up? Which prompted the Ultimate Farmland Preservation Tour, and this really came from a grassroots effort of people coming together and saying, we don't really like the trends that we're seeing with this unmitigated sprawl that's going on, and are there programs that we can learn about that we could bring back to Michigan and maybe implement here in Mid-State? So we gathered, and I say we, it was at the time I was working for the Rural Development Council of Michigan, which is a private-public partnership with the USDA and the state of Michigan, and we rallied around some people and said, you know what, I think we should go out east. Because those programs out east have been around for 30 and 40 years, and I'm sure they have pitfalls and tweaks and things that they could share with us. But why don't we get a group of people, and let's just take them out there and see what we can do and what we can learn. And so we got our first Ultimate Farmland Preservation Tour together in 1998. We had about 150 people. We took two buses, and we went out east. And what we learned out there was so life-changing that we decided we needed to come back and do it again and again and again. And we ended up doing 10 farmland preservation tours out there. We took over 1,500 people. At the time, we took the governor, Granholm, out there, and we also hosted Governor Glendening from Maryland to learn about their programs. And what we found and discovered is that the programs that were running out east were actually quite possible to come here and in Michigan and for us to do that. And so that's when we came back from 2000, we passed PA 262 of 2000, which allowed landowners to voluntarily apply to preserve their farms. And at that time, they could only do it to the state. And what we did when we came back is we wanted to allow landowners to apply to their local units of government. We figured they knew best where the farmland should be preserved. They knew best what kinds of farmland should be preserved, and so that was implemented in 2000. But we talked a lot about the purchase and development rights, and Vivian and I actually had a really good conversation about this, and this is a really complex term when we talk about the purchase and development rights. And what I think is more accurate is we are actually purchasing conservation easements. And when I first went out east to learn about these, it was really confusing to me because the only context I had for a conservation easement or an easement was a consumer's power easement or a gas line easement, an ingress or egress easement. And these easements are not that. These easements are easements that protect and restrict. So when the easement, it's like a blanket being placed on the property, and it is not actually purchasing the simple that property, but it's you're purchasing a portion of that property. So the very clinical definition is it's a mechanism to permanently protect land. Landowners are compensated based on the market value of that conservation easement, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But they're done by using state-certified appraisals to determine what the market value of that easement is. Participation is completely voluntary. We're not changing zoning. We aren't mandating where these farms can be preserved. It is absolutely up to that landowner and that landowner's family or whoever else they want to consult to make the decision of whether or not they want to see their farms permanently preserved. In exchange for being compensated for the fair market value of that property, the landowner agrees to accept a deed restriction limiting the non-agricultural uses of the land. So essentially, it's limiting residential, commercial, and industrial uses on the property. All other private property rights remain intact. That landowner can still sell the property. They can donate the property. They can give it to their children. All that this easement is doing is restricting the non-agricultural uses of the property. So it's a really great essential or estate planning tool. It's a great way to think about when you're looking at passing your land on, what do I want to see happen with that land? What would be my gift to my children to see happen with that land? And it really allows them to do some financial planning as well, because if they're going to receive a lump sum of dollars, they're able to disperse that to their children, because a lot of times we think of that. What are we going to do for our kids when we pass? Are we going to give them our property? And that's when we see the sibling fights start. That's when we see a lot of the land having to be sold, because we can't come up with an equitable solution between siblings. So this actually is a really nice tool to help get that settled in the forefront before the property is transferred. And it's also a great way for young farmers to get started. A lot of times young farmers can't compete with development values. If they're wanting to get in and start farming, they can't pay the $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 an acre and make it cash flow. With buying a farm that's already preserved and taking those development potential away from it, they're actually able to buy the farm at its residual value or at its true agricultural value, because the landowner has already received the development potential from it. So it's actually a really great way for young farmers to get started. And I like to use this illustration because we think of every property has rights associated with it, whether it's mineral rights, air rights, riparian rights, whatever those rights are. And your right to develop is just one stick in that bundle. And that's all we're doing. We are severing that stick from the property, and it is being extinguished. So there's a lot of reasons why preserving land is good, and it really does benefit the public as a whole. And there's three main reasons for that and why that benefit is, and that they're social, environmental, and economic. Those tend to be our three key factors of what the public gains from preserving farmland. But the social, it's an effective tool to help manage growth wisely and ensure rural character. It helps local units of government decide where is the most appropriate place for preservation and for agriculture and for open space. And then where is the most appropriate place for development? And what are we doing in each one of those areas to make sure that that happens? So what are we doing to support agriculture and open spaces and in natural areas? And what are we doing in the areas that we want to see development? Are we helping to create affordable housing options? Are we helping to create density-based growth? How can we manage both of those? It also helps to control sprawl, reduce traffic, protect your beautiful landscapes and the historic sites. All of the character issues, the social issues that we see. That's one benefit. The next, obviously, is the environmental benefit. By preserving farmland, we're indirectly preserving aquifer recharge areas, wetlands, forests, and fields that absorb rainwater. One interesting fact that I just plugged in here really quickly is 75% of all the rain on open ground stays in the field. Only 25% of that is runoff to streams and lakes, which really helps with runoff and any kind of riparian issues that you might have. So open ground is actually really important for water. And then we have the economic benefits. And personally, I think the economic benefits are probably the biggest factor in why we should be preserving farmland. Agriculture is one of the most robust industries in our state. And when the auto industry was at its height, agriculture was number two. And when that toppled off, agriculture is now the number one industry in this state. That's a fact. It's the number one economic producing industry in the state. And when we get down and peel away the layers into these local areas, I could argue that it probably is the number one economic revenue generator in many of your rural areas as well. When you look at a market value, this is based just off of the 2017 census, and this is just market value. So this is just the raw commodity product, the value of the raw commodities after they come off the field. In Berry County, these are specific to Berry County, you have a market value of over $139 million. That was in 2017. Obviously, that can fluctuate based on your values, but 2017, we saw some pretty low prices. So you can see that would go up. It has been upwards in the height when we were looking at $12 corn and $14 soybeans. more than triple that number. But as a rule of thumb, on average, you can multiply that number 7 times as it moves from farm gate to food plate. So eventually, as it starts at the farm gate, it's $139 million. And as it moves through processing and production and manufacturing and retail and sales, you can multiply that 7-fold by the time it reaches the food plate. And all of that activity is churning in Berry County. So we see the land base, which is the agricultural, the farms, what's actually being produced as your raw products. But then the second tier of that, which is probably equally as important, if not more important, is your agribusinesses. And they are directly linked to that land base. And your agribusinesses is where the lion's share of that economic activity is going to occur. So if we want to maintain a robust agribusiness in this county, we have to maintain a strong land base to support that. So dollar for dollar, ag preservation is a smart investment. So we're looking at this as an investment with an economic return. The more we put into agriculture, the more that economic engine is going to turn, and the more we're going to have. When we went out to out east, it was really fascinating because we would go to these areas, and they were 7 and 8,000 acres, contiguous blocks of agriculture. I want you to think about that for just a minute, because I don't know if we can find an area in Michigan where we can look and find 7 or 8,000 acres contiguous of agricultural production. And these, mind you, we were about 25 miles from downtown Baltimore when we were looking at these 7 and 8,000 acres of contiguous acreage. So they did a fantastic job of trying to maintain an agricultural industry. But the one thing that I thought was the most critical point of that is down every couple miles, every couple fields, you were seeing a John Deere dealership. You were seeing a processing facility. You were seeing a cheese processing facility because dairy was really big, or some sort of industry, because everybody flocked to that 8,000 acres to develop their agribusinesses because they knew they had a steady, stable agricultural industry to rely on. So they started reinvesting in those areas because that was where agriculture was going to remain. So, unfortunately, we see the highest rate of conversion from farmlands to other uses on our most productive soil. If you were to draw a line from Muskegon up to Midland, that area south is where we see the most productive farmland in the state. That happens to be where we have the highest rates of conversion. So those are the areas that we really need to look at and focus on. And what we see, this is something that happens a lot when we start seeing the conversion of farmland into other uses, and that is the cost of community services. A lot of times we've been in this mindset that we need the tax base. So when a developer comes in and asks us to rezone so that we can build houses, the incentive, most of the time, is we want to increase our tax base. We want that revenue to tick up so that we can continue to provide all the services. But what we don't see is that as that revenue ticks up, you do see a slight increase, and you can enjoy that for usually 5 to 10 years, and then the expenditures begin to creep up. And eventually they become even with the revenue, and then they begin to exceed it. Because what we see is residential development doesn't necessarily pay for itself in terms of what it demands and services. So what they've done, this was a company that was hired out east, and they have done and conducted cost of community services studies all over the United States. They've done them in California and Texas and Washington and Maryland. This particular one was actually in Ann Arbor. So this is an example from Thia Township, Ann Arbor. And what they determined was for every dollar generated in revenue, agricultural property only demands 37 cents in services, which makes sense. Cows don't go to school. Corn doesn't call 911. Agriculture is not demanding the same type of services that residential development does. But what they found is, again, for every dollar generated in revenue from property tax from residential development, it demanded $1.16 in services. So what we were seeing is this inequity between agriculture and what they were demanding in services and what they were paying, and residential development and what they were demanding and then what they were paying. And what we're trying to do is get this to be an equilibrium.
What is the White County's on that one?
That was just me highlighting Barry County right there. You see that?
Then you highlighted over by Detroit too, and then.
Those are, what does it say, other lands. So I actually was the one that I highlighted the Barry County, so I'm not sure what the other lands are near Detroit. So across the state of Michigan, PA 262 of 2000 passed. With that passage, it created an incentive for counties to get their ordinances passed because they wanted to now be in a position to state funds, and in order to receive state funds, they had to have a number of things in place. So when this came up, we had seen over 24 county programs that have been developed throughout the state. There are 4 township programs, and there are 5 that are funded with dedicated funding sources. Ingham County is one, Washtenaw County is another, Peninsula Township, Acme Township, and then you have the Ann Arbor Greenbelt Program. And the Ann Arbor Greenbelt Program started out as a partnership between the city and the surrounding 4 townships when they first went after their millage. Now it's the city, and I believe there's like 8 or 9 townships that have all come in. And it actually spawned the county to have their own program so that they could work in concert with the township and the Ann Arbor program. So I want to talk a little bit about Ingham County, just to give you a perspective of a county that is somewhat similar to Barry County and that's gone through this experience. So Ingham County is the first successful county farmland and open space preservation millage in Michigan. We were the first one to go after the voters, and they actually voted to fund farmland preservation. We had passed the ordinance in 2004, very similar to how Barry County's program started. It was a grassroots effort. There was a lot of people that came together after going on the Ultimate Farmland Preservation Tours that wanted to do something about farmland preservation in Barry County. So they petitioned their commissioners, talked about what the need was, why we needed to do it, passed the ordinance in 2004. We had a hard time convincing our commissioners that this was a viable program. We have about 19 commissioners, 16 represent Lansing, 3 represent our rural out counties. And that was a lot of education, a lot of public hearings to try and get the commissioners to understand why on earth would an urban commissioner support farmland preservation. But they ultimately did. We petitioned them in 2006 to go to the ballot, and they did not think it was the right time. They said, you need to wait. So we did. We went back and kept on doing our application cycles, getting as many landowners signed up as we could to demonstrate that we had interest and that we had people that were waiting in line. And we went back to them in 2008, ready to go in the general election. And when they came to us and said, yes, we will put you on the ballot, but because we have Headley in the general, we want you to go in the primary. And this was May. So we rolled up our sleeves, raised as much money as we could, and put through the best campaign that we knew to do. And we ended up winning in 2008 by a very narrow margin. I think we passed by 51-49, one of the most narrow margins we had. But in hindsight, and we can say this looking back now, going in the primary was actually a blessing, because if you recall, at the general election in November of 2008, what was happening? That was the height of the national downturn, and we never would have gotten it passed at that point. So we counted our blessings and went to work. So we had about $1 million a year. After the crash, obviously the county taxable value fell, and we were dealing with about $900,000 a year. Nonetheless, we did what we could with it. And so I brought some of our annual reports so that you can look through. But we have just over 6,000 acres permanently preserved of farmland and open space. We have about 95 standing applications currently waiting to get into the program. We have more interest now than we have ever had. And we have some really great demonstration projects of how these fewest blocks of agricultural land can really help start that planning discussion. The millage, the initial millage in 2008 was for 10 years. So it, we sunsetted in 2018 if we weren't going to go back for a renewal. We again went and petitioned our commissioners. Again, we had a whole new batch of commissioners because there was that turnover. So we had all the education to do over again. So we went back through, met with each of the commissioners individually, talked about the program, talked about what we had done to get there, and they, again, a bit reluctantly decided, yes, we'll put you back on the ballot. So we went back in November for our renewal, and we set records in terms of how the margin that we won by in 2018. We won by over 74%. And the difference between the 2008 and the 2018 election is in the 2008 election, only the urban core areas passed it. So we had Lansing, Meridian Township, and East Lansing, which was our most populated urban areas. That populace carried the vote in 2008. Not a single rural community passed it. When we went back for our renewal, those same urban centers, of course, passed it again. But it passed by overwhelming margins in our rural communities, which was something that was actually quite shocking to me. But not a single community did not pass it in the 2018 election. So what that said to me is after 10 years of a track record of getting demonstration projects, neighbors talking to neighbors and learning about the process and knowing that it actually can work and be successful, they voted for it. So we, again, are going back. We have a goal. We're going to try to get another 10,000 acres by the end of our sunset, which is 2028. When it passed in 2008, we did not have an open space program. Our open space ordinance passed in 2010. So we've had a lot of success now with doing farmland and open space properties. So we are working to get just as many easements under our belt as we can than when we started. So to talk just a little bit about how the process works, typically what we'll do is we run the application cycle, which requires the Ag Board approval, and then that moves into the Board of Commissioner approval. So they will approve the selection criteria, which is actually the mechanism that ranks and prioritizes our farms and open space properties. So then we receive the application. Applications, both new and old, are scored and ranked against the approved criteria for both the farmland criteria and the open space criteria. Two very different programs administered by the same body, but they do very different functions. We look at the top scoring landowners, and this can change from year to year depending on how much funding you have or the type of farm that you have, but typically you're going to choose your top scoring farm. Could be 4 1 year, could be 6 1 year, it could be 1. I also administer the Kent County program. Typically, we do 1 to 2 farms a year in Kent County. So that top scoring farm, or maybe the number 2 scoring farm, is what we do. And those are selected for appraisals. After we have the selection, we go out and survey the property. We exempt out any houses or buildings from the property. And then we also suggest that they keep out at least 2 to 5 acres around their house and buildings, just to reduce any kind of conflict that might arise and give themselves a bit of a buffer. And we encourage them to keep that out of the easement. Once the survey is done, then we call the appraisal. And the appraisal, when that comes in, that is assessing essentially 2 areas of that land. So they're actually quite large. They're not a typical appraisal. It's actually 2 appraisals combined into 1. What they're looking at is the market value or the before value of that easement. So what is that property worth before it's restricted? What would it be worth on the open market? And let's just say, for example's sake, that's $3,000 an acre. So if you were to put a real estate sign in it today, what would you get for it? Top, say it's $3,000 an acre.
That includes mineral rights?
It includes everything, yes. The second appraisal that they do is, what would that property be worth if it were restricted? So what would it be worth if you could do nothing but farm it? And let's say, for number's sake, that's $1,500 an acre, because you're taking away that ability to develop, which is a big chunk of that value. And the difference between those two values is your easement value. So $1,500 an acre. So you take your before value minus your after value, and that's how you arrive at your easement value. Now, we've had a lot of farmers that have said, well, why would I sell it? Because I can make so much more selling to development. Well, if your comps are telling you that you're going to get $3,000 an acre for your market value, if you preserve your property and you receive that $1,500, which is your conservation easement, and you turn around and sell it to another farmer for $1,500 an acre, you've reached your market value. So it's a really great way to be able to accomplish what you want in terms of getting equity out of your property without actually having to sell it. So once the appraisal is done, the survey is done, then we enter into an option agreement with the land. Willing seller, willing buyer. This is the point where it becomes very traditional real estate. You do the survey, the appraisal, you do your option agreement. It's very, very similar. At this point is typically where we would make our application to the federal program, the ASAP program, which is the Agricultural Conservation Easement Program. This is a countrywide program, so it's the United States, obviously. All of the states compete on a competitive level for funding, depending on how robust their programs are. So Michigan tends, unfortunately, to fall short in terms of a lot of the bigger programs like Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that are getting $40 and $50 million a year. Michigan typically gets between $1.5 and $2.5 million a year. And those funds are dispersed competitively between programs within the state of Michigan. Federal funds are usually awarded in the fall, and after a lot of work with the federal program, we are usually allowed to close, which means we sit at a closing table, paperwork is signed, check is exchanged, and we close and record the deed of easement. And once that's done, then on an annual basis, somebody will go out and monitor the farm to ensure that the provisions of the easement remain intact. So the sources, we actually are quite lucky in 2019, in fact, because the state has been talking about hosting another application cycle. And this is significant because the state has not held an application cycle for at least 10 years. So those of us that are involved are really looking at this as a way that we can boost up some of our program momentum and start getting some matching dollars. They've talked, this is just rumbling, upwards of maybe $2 million as a state match for this program. So if you think about using federal dollars, state dollars, and then anything that you could raise locally, you really could have a nice match for a couple properties if you wanted to preserve them. But basically, that's it. I usually like to end with this quote because I think it's really significant and poignant for what we're talking about. The land was not given to us by our parents. It was lent to us by our children. So I think that it'd be a great time for questions or discussion. Is that okay, Kevin? Yes.
Mineral rights, when you say for only agriculture, that means they can't put an oil well on it or mine it for sand or gravel, right?
It's a really good question because I think that comes up in almost every transaction that we do. So it depends on the type of easement. The federal program does not allow mineral rights. So any kind of extraction, they do not allow. We're working with them to try and get that changed. We've had a couple successful years where we've been able to get that done, but for the most part, they do not. And they don't for any kind of gravel pit or any kind of extraction of that way. However, in Ingham County, we've structured our easements so that we do allow the exploration and extraction of mineral rights. And what we do is it's usually a 1-for-80 ratio. So for every 80 acres, you could have a 1-acre pumping station or a 1-acre pad. Now, when we get to closing, if in the chain of title we discover that there is a current mineral lease or oil and gas lease, we have to get that either released or subordinated before we can close. Did that answer?
Yeah, that's on the mining part with my main thing.
Yeah.
That they're not allowed to mine gravel on.
No, no. And the best way that I can explain the conservation easement is that they're really concerned with the topsoil. So if these are perpetual easements, we're looking at the ability to farm in 50 and 100 years. And the topsoil is actually the most critical piece. So anything that is going to permanently disrupt the topsoil is going to be a point of contention with the easement. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Jim Whitman. Now, this is basically the same program that the county tried like 15 years ago, correct? Here? In other words, we applied for development rights back then.
I'm not calling
they had
this
county,
is the ordinance.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
They had county millage back then, and I think it went down like 7,000, 8,000 against supporting it financially.
Sure.
The tax basis.
Sure.
It sounds like it's almost the same thing you apply for, then you're on the point system.
It's the same thing, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But that was farmland, not open space.
Yeah, so what we're talking about tonight is revising the ordinance that was passed, and I think that's what you were referring to. And then, in addition, we are looking at developing an open space ordinance, which we currently do not have.
And to it would be two separate.
They're two separate programs, run by the same board, very similar, but they are two separate programs.
Is there a mineral rights difference too?
Same thing for open space. Yeah, same thing for open space. Yes.
So in your presentation, you're talking about going out and setting up for the surveyors and then the appraisers and working with the federal government, and you say we, and then after it's all done and over, then someone goes out and makes sure that they're staying within the easement confines. Who are we and they?
Sure, that's a good question. When I talk about that, I say it in the context of the Berry County program.
The Berry County
program
board,
the preservation board. And their program would be the one that would administer that. So they would be in charge of setting up the survey and setting up the appraisal and doing the work that it takes to get an application from start to finish.
Recording the deed. And
yep. Yep. That's all part of those administrative things that we were talking about earlier.
And then, so that board pays for it?
Well, that's where they would have to find that their prerogative of how they would want to fund it, and even if they do want to. Nothing with the ordinance obligates them to fund it. The ordinance is simply a mechanism so that if they want to in the future, they can. And it allows you to apply for federal and state funding. Without it, there is no application to the federal or the state program.
You, the county or the board?
The
ag board.
Well, the ag board is acting on behalf of the
okay,
county.
That's,
so it would certainly be through the county. Yes.
So is the enforcement through the county too?
It is.
So it would be
the
sheriff's?
It could be set up however you would want to. In Ingham County, we're in charge of our own monitoring. So Christian and I, one of us, will go out and monitor the properties and just make sure. In Kent County, they have the equalization department that they partner with, and they're the ones that actually go out and monitor the properties. In other counties, I've seen the MSU Extension program do it. So it really can be a variety of ways and structures. It depends on how the county would want to do it.
If the people are not using it for open space or farming, what's the penalty?
Well, there is nothing in the ordinance that requires them to farm it. The only thing that is going to trigger some sort of legal action would be if they were building a house on it. So if you go out to the property and it somehow slips through the building permit process at the township and they start breaking ground and you've got a shell of a house up and you realize that they're building a house, then the county would go through whatever legal action they would need to enforce the provisions of the easement. But there's a lot that would happen before you really get to that point, which is why it's important to have somebody as a coordinator to develop that relationship with those landowners. Not necessarily the landowner that is the initial one that usually they have problems with. It's that second and third generation that buy the farm with the easement on it already, perhaps don't understand the provisions of the easement, and then go out and start to build. So it's really important to develop that rapport and that relationship early.
Well, I just might comment that the board takes care of that here. We really only have one farm preserved, and I personally do the inspection of that every week, making sure that things are the way they're supposed to be. And I can imagine if we got past maybe six preservations, we might look to the county, that there's some part of the county government to help us with that.
Sure.
Or seek help somewhere.
Sure.
How does it work when someone preserves their land and you come up with a figure for them, and then the next generation comes along and they want to sell it? They can only sell it for agriculture.
That's right.
But they can sell it for the highest price they can
Absolutely.
Get for agriculture.
Absolutely. And what we have found in some of these areas, like that 8,000 to 9,000 acre contiguous block, we're finding that farmland that has easements on it are actually selling at or better than face value because so many people want to farm in those areas. They're attractive now. They have become, there is now an inherent incentive to buying a farm within a preserved area, and they're willing to pay for it.
So if I take it that it's the county's responsibility to let the new owner know that there's an easement on it?
Well, that's in the due diligence process. And so if I were to put my real estate hat on, if I've got somebody that's looking to buy a potential farm, you're going to do a preliminary title search and realize that you've got an encumbrance, a big one, and you're going to inform your client.
So it's written right on the title?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It is in the chain of title. Yes. That's it all.
Madam Chair, are we going to talk about open space in this discussion, or do you want to wait?
It's on our agenda in two different agenda requests, because originally we need to be able to make amendments to the farmland preservation ordinance in order to pass the open space ordinance. So that would be the discussion. They tie together because, like she said, it would be the same committee that would administer both programs. And there's reference in the open space ordinance to the farmland preservation ordinance, and because they mirror each other as they go. So I guess it's up to Stacey. She wants to talk
I
about
have no problem.
Open space
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah.
I just want to know, what is open space and how do you know it when you see it?
The age-old question, what is it? And the best definition that I have come up with is open space is essentially you have working and non-working land. Working lands are lands that are producing a product, and non-working lands are not producing a product. They are fallow, in a sense. So anything that is not working is essentially considered open space. But when we look at our criteria, so we have to go through and decide what kind of open space do we want to see. Because I, in my opinion, I don't think that just open space is enough to put an easement on it. It needs to have some sort of, it needs to have something special. It needs to have some environmental benefit. It needs to be somewhat sensitive to outside impacts to where it would be, it would warrant a conservation easement. And that's why we need to develop that criteria to decide our water, is water areas important? Our recharge area is important? Is habitat, is migration, the flora and fauna? What are the important pieces of open space that we want to see?
And so, like, the Ann Arbor Greenbelt has that type of criteria
they
that
do.
Their community has defined?
They do. They have a working land and a non-working land.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you consider a forest? Because that's a product, right?
Well, unfortunately, the state of Michigan does not consider timber an agricultural product. Christmas tree harvest, they do, but not timber. So that is not considered an agricultural operation.
Don't try to sell that to our lumberyard.
I hear you. It actually has been, it's been a point of contention a lot of times in the definition that the state has, because Christmas trees are considered an agricultural agricultural operations. Because they tend to flirt with that line of being the bedding plant operation in horticulture, but I guess they had to draw the line somewhere. You had a question, sir.
Yeah, I'm curious about the differences between, obviously, and you touched on a little bit, the difference between a farmland easement and an open space easement.
Sure.
And you just touched on the open spaces are more critical environments.
Yep.
So in that case, are you in the, are there stipulations and easements, like in a forest area, that you're going to be using a forest management plan, and which does allow, if it's set up right, for harvesting trees as long as it's done in the proper way. Is that the type of thing you're seeing in the open space easement versus the agricultural easement?
Excellent question, yes. So, the farmland easement, 51%, this is a point I think that's clear, with the farmland easement, 51% must be dedicated to agricultural production. It must be tillable. So the other 49% can be fallow, it can be wet, it can be wooded, it can be anything non-agricultural. And we will have that under the umbrella of the farmland preservation easement, as long as 51% is in agricultural production. Within that farmland easement, timbering and harvesting of your woodlot is allowed. If you have a robust commercial timbering operation, it must be conducted within a forestry management plan. It is not an outright no, but you have to follow the forestry management plan to carry on the health of the forest. If you're just going out to cut a couple cords so that you can, you know, have some fire in your fireplace, no one cares. If you're commercial, it needs to be conducted with a forestry management plan. Now, the open space easement is a little different because we are primarily concerned with the environmental aspects of the property. We're not as concerned with agriculture. We are more concerned with keeping a healthy forest or with keeping healthy riparian areas and keeping wetland areas healthy. And so you will see just a few differences in that. For example, they will be a little bit more restrictive in terms of your commercial timbering. Or if you have an agricultural envelope, which we do allow in open because many of these properties, if you're looking at an 80-acre piece, and let's say 50 acres are open space, but he farms the front 30, that doesn't qualify for a farmland easement, but it does qualify for an open space easement. And that 50 acres that he's farming is still a very viable environmental benefit. We will define the agricultural area in that open space easement. Agricultural activities are absolutely allowed. However, let's say that the landowner breaks up tile and wants to let it revert back to a wetland, if it naturally wants to be wet. He cannot go back in and retile and drain and convert it back to agricultural production. Once it is allowed to go back to its natural setting, and to be clear, this is an open space easement, it must remain in an open state. So we're more concerned about the environmental benefits in the open space easement than we are in the agricultural easement. Does that answer your question? Yes.
So does either one of these, preservation or open space, have anything to do with the taxable value? Because I take it these are already zoned agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. We see a lot of the impact, but it varies once the easement is in place. And I say it varies because some landowners will see a reduction in their taxable value when a conservation easement is in place, and some will not. A lot of our open space properties probably won't see much reduction, but some of the farmland will. And I say that because it varies, and it really is based on your assessor. And if the assessor has been assessing it at a true agricultural value all along, and you put a conservation easement on it, you're not going to see much difference. However, if you happen to be in a high development area and your assessor is taxing you at a speculative or a highest and best use, and you put a conservation easement on, you might see a slight downtick in your value.
Two different questions.
Yes. Yes.
When you're in here, when you're talking about the attributes of farmland and preserving open space, rural character, all of that, when it's talking about benefits such as watershed quality and preservation of wildlife do these farms that they preserve have to be in the MEAT program where they're actually doing environmental ag practices?
I love that question because they do not. It is not mandated. However, that's a really good discussion item for developing the selection criteria because let's say that you have two properties that are absolutely identical in every aspect, but one of them is a MEAT verified farm and one of them is not. Should there be some points of preferential treatment given to the one that is? Perhaps. I mean, I think that that's a very viable, worthy program, and we should probably give them some points. But it is not obligated in our easement that they do. It's a great way that we can give some differential difference in applications that are selection criteria process.
And I think it's fair to point out that MEAT was not around when the ag preservation program started.
Well, I know it's so. It's more new.
Yeah.
The other question I have is the dollars.
Sure.
Passing an ordinance to promote or to set aside and preserve farmland. Okay. Funding. Okay. I don't want to make writing an ordinance and then not having a line item to fund it. Can, and for sake of board, can the Ag Board seek funding other than county funding?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Foundations, fundraisers, yeah, there's a whole slew of land.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it's mentioned in our ordinance.
Yeah, I know that it is mentioned in there, but I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Is
the county required?
No. There's a lot of them right now that have ordinances passed and for whatever reason haven't picked it up to do anything with it.
Everybody hates unfunded mandates. That's why I'm really interested in these answers.
But this isn't a mandate. This is a voluntary program.
I know. But what I'm saying is I wouldn't want to have an ordinance and then not know how it was going to be funded.
Sure. And I think that's a valid concern. And what it really comes down to, Vivian, is I think how much do you value this kind of program, and is it important enough when you rank it against other county priorities in terms of your budgeting? You know, if this is something that truly is important and really is going to impact Barry County, then it would probably be a worthy thing to consider putting some money in. You don't have to.
I'm just asking the question.
Yes.
Because it's just, you know, like I said, I don't want to implement something that, you know, we got to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
For the property that we have preserved, the local match, because you have a percentage that you have to match locally, was a donation from the farmer. So he donated a percentage of the money of his development right. He didn't get anything from the county. He was the one that donated close to $60,000 worth of value.
Was that just a portion, or was there money another source also?
That was 25% of the value of his land. So the federal money applied for federal dollars, and he got paid federal money. He got paid state money, and the matching 25% he donated. So he only got paid 75% of what his development right was worth.
Thank you. I did not know that. I wondered how that worked.
Well, we didn't have a millage to pay for it.
Right.
And while there is a small fund at the community foundation, it's not enough to pay for much of anything as far as development rights. And so there not being a philanthropist in Barry County that pays for those things like Ottawa County and Kent County, that was the way to get the local match is he donated it.
Oh.
And then George donated his whole thing.
That's basically what I was going to say. We have, at this point, state and federal money coming in. The other thing that a landowner can do is donate, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to get anything back for it because they're a federal program that they can get some of their income tax deferred.
Yeah, that's a long.
But there is a donation program where they can donate.
There's a lot of tax incentives that come along with donations that makes it nice for landowners to get some benefit for that donation. Yes.
Question.
value with the development rights of $6,000 an acre. I don't know if you're a serious township land or something.
Woodland.
It's along 78, within a mile of M78.
Sure.
And so it's got some good value, $6,000.
Yeah.
The appraisal comes up with $1,500 as the development rights, a quarter of it, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit down at closing, they sign all the papers, the farm owner, landowner, whatever, it's open space or farmland, walks away with a check that day, $X thousand, $35,000. Big profit, let's say. Okay, how is that treated for income tax purposes? Is it 1099 just like the sale would be at the closing? Or how is that treated?
Exactly like that. It is a 1099. Yep. So it will be taxed off of the basis of the property. So it's like any other real estate transaction. It's a portion of real property that you're receiving. So when we get to this point, this is a long, these are not quick processes, unfortunately. So typical timelines it takes for us to close the conservation can be 12 to 18 months sometimes to close, so they take a while. So when the appraisal comes in and the landowner says, yes, I am okay taking $1,500 an acre or whatever that is, as we move through that process, we strongly encourage the landowner to meet and consult with an attorney and to meet and consult with a CPA so that they have a plan for how they're going to receive that money. I sat in a closing one time and handed somebody a check for over $500,000 and said, well, what are you going to do with your money? And he said, I'm going to go straight to my safety deposit box. And I said, you need to have a plan, for sure, because the government is going to find it one way or another.
The other non-tangible part may be close, that's dollars and cents.
Yeah.
There's five kids involved in this operation. Three of them don't want dad to do the easement,
yeah,
mom to do the easement.
Yeah.
How do you handle that situation?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that's a scenario that happens all the time. And that's when we see families divided and siblings don't get along, and then they have to sell the farm. One of the great examples that I saw of this was a really large turkey farm out in,
I saw this on Dr. Phil.
It was in Pennsylvania, and it was the Brubaker farm, and he was a very good turkey producer, one of the largest in the state, had a great, great operation. He had four children. He had two boys and two girls. The two boys wanted to farm. The two girls didn't. Mom and dad want to retire. They want to sell it to the boys so that they can farm and still cash flow and make a profit, but yet they still feel like they're obligated to give the girls their fair share of the value of the farm. And so what he did is when he sold his easement, let's say it was about 50% is actually typically what we get, 50% of the value, he did a 1031 like-kind exchange, where he took the money, the proceeds from that real estate sale, and he put it into an intermediary and closed on another piece of property, real property, for his daughters. He actually invested the money into apartments. So when the boys came time, when it came time to sell to the sons, they were able to buy it at the residual agricultural value, because they're not competing with the development value, cash flow the farm, and then the girls that didn't want a farm got the apartment. So it was a really great way to divide up how the money is going to be dispersed equitably without having to sell it on the open market.
The federal government pre-cut easement as a sale for the 1031 property?
Yes. It's an interest in real property. So any kind of real property, it cannot be a business, it must be land, but apartments are real estate, is land, and they count that as viable. Yes.
I do have one concern looking over section 12, item D, going down through there where the funding is going to come from.
Okay.
Which is the bottom lane here. I mean, the government's already mentioned.
Yep.
If we got to steer out here, you can't do anything, or they have to grow any more, we can go up and save 50 farms. The general appropriation for the town, I would hope before my commissioner at least, both said the same for preserving farmland or an open field out here, that the damn roads are fixed. Second one, special assessment. Now, this is a thing that people don't understand. This board and any public body can adopt a special assessment for something that people don't have a right to vote on. It can be for police services, it could be for whatever, and you've probably got no better way of making people upset than to do a special assessment. Now, the millage, put it on the ballot, we'll have a chance to knock it down if we don't like it. The other one is bonding or notes. You better not be bonding for this and can't even get a commission on aging.
Now, you say when this happens, it's permanent. Can it be bought back?
It can, only under specific terms. And those specific
terms.
It
can only go in under specific terms, right?
Right.
Just a reversal?
The only way it can come out is through eminent domain or condemnation. So you must have a court of competent jurisdiction that declares that there is a public need or purpose for that property and that there is no other viable place for that public need or purpose than on that farm. And when that happens, let's say MDOT wants to come in and put a highway through, and you're going right through the heart of easements. MDOT must reappraise what the value of those development rights are and pay those back to the county. So at the current market rate, those would have to be reimbursed to the county. They would also have to appraise what the agricultural value is of the farm and pay that back to the landowner. And that's the only way that they can be severed.
I was the understanding that it could be turned around if it went back through the same process backwards and the money was refunded.
Absolutely not.
It's not the way I read that.
Nope. There are different versions of ordinances out there.
No, this was from the state where I got it.
Eminent domain. There.
I just want to make a comment on your previous scenario where you were talking about the family that decided to go into the program. And then the advantage for those people who want to stay on the farm, the next generation, at least if they have got to go into an agreement with their siblings, it's at the farm value per acre and not the best, the highest use.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that in place is actually an advantage in the state's
mm-hmm. Very much.
This is a question that Commissioner Schultz has.
I don't think this is
that's from the insurance.
Yeah, this is not the same one. There are different kinds of easements out there. The state administers obviously wetland easements and forest easements, and they have different types, and that may be one where they can allow that. But for farmland, it is only eminent domain. They are intended to be for cultural conservation easements. And the federal program reviews your easement language, and if it is not permanent, if it is not perpetual, they won't give you your money. So.
The road is easy enough to understand. How about a consumer's power highline coming through or a wind farm?
Sure. Those have come up quite a bit, actually, and the other one that seems to be coming up quite a bit are these solar farms.
Solar farm, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they come up a lot, and what we really come down to when we consider easements like that is, again, going back to the conservation values of the property, the topsoil. So, obviously, a road is going to be detrimental to the topsoil, to the agriculture, to the conservation values of the property. Now, a consumer's power easement, where you're looking at perhaps just some poles and some basic maintenance, may not have that much of an impact, and it may be something that they could do. The solar energy farms are not allowed because you're basically destroying the organic matter of the topsoil. So it's really frustrating when we get into this. We may even get into litigation in Ingham County over one of these, but because of the term farm, the solar farm, it's really been misconstrued as to what it really is. It is nothing like a farm, but it's the terminology that's really causing havoc. But wind turbines and any other kind of easements like that are going to have a significant impact are not allowed on the easement.
You brought up an interesting point there. You said we may get into litigation.
Yeah.
Who's the we in that
situation? That's Ingham County. We've had a...
Yeah, but I mean, who is it? The county? Governmental body, the Farmland Preservation, Open Space Board, who's going to write the legal checks to the legal agency?
The county of Ingham. It is their obligation to enforce the provisions of the conservation easement. And we've actually set up, with our millage funding, we've set up an endowment fund for that purpose. And it's important to know that when you get into these programs, you need to be all in. So if you're really serious about farmland preservation and serious about what those provisions mean and outline, then you will be serious about making sure that they stand up. And that's what Ingham County has agreed to do. And that's, I mean, we're doing everything we can, obviously, we most likely will not, but to avoid that. But if he starts putting up solar panels without our permission, then we have a legal obligation to enforce the provisions.
But that would be a rare scenario, right? I assume that most of the properties that you professionally have dealt with, it is not litigated in court?
No. And most of them are actually quite innocent, and they just
right.
didn't understand that they could or could not do something. And so usually this, again, comes down to that relationship and that rapport, that you need to be able to go out and talk with them and say, listen, you know, this is a violation
right.
of the easement. Here are the things we need to do to remedy it. And then you have certain timelines that they have to meet to remedy it. And 9 times out of 10, you don't ever have to do
mm-hmm.
it.
All cell phone towers?
No, not allowed. I do have a farm, though, that does have a cell tower on it, but it was at the time of the easement closing, and we simply surveyed it out. Yeah.
Look, I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So I tell them I want the cell phone tower left out, and I want to do the rest. Can I do that?
Yeah. Absolutely.
If it's already there.
If it's already there. If you think you may, if you are in negotiations with the cell tower company, survey it out anyway.
Yeah.
That's why we talk about that 2 to 5 acre buffer, so that it gives yourself some flexibility. Even with the mineral rights, when you're talking with a federal easement, if that is something you think you may want to do, keep out a portion of the property so that you have the opportunity to put a pad on it or whatever, a pumping station, so that you can access those. And with the technology they have these days of directional boring and things, it's usually not an issue. But when we get these easements, it does require some forethought to think about what you want to do. We do have property owners that say, I want my kids to be able to build on the farm, and what can I do with that? And they keep out lots. So there may be a 2 acre lot that they keep out in the back because someday they may have a child or grandchild that wants to build on the farm. We do that in the beginning, and then the easement has absolutely no jurisdiction over that property. There's one question.
A lot of the tax assessments will come as agricultural residential. Is that a issue that has to be resolved?
At the beginning? You mean before the easement is placed?
Correct. Sure.
No. Ag residential is fine. It seems to be a paint with a wide brush nomenclature for anything agricultural. Very rarely do you see true agricultural designations. They're all inherently having a residential component to them. Yeah.
I don't have a question, but I have a couple of comments.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to say I was very impressed with your presentation.
Oh, thank you.
You did everything. You did mention, miss a few.
Uh-oh.
One thing I would like to point out is when you protect your farmland, you're protecting the wildlife habitat. That's important in this county. We have a lot of sports-minded people in Berry County. The second point I want to make is if you do preserve your farmland, you're still allowed to enroll it into the federal program, the Conservation Reserve mm-hmm. Program. Maybe some farmers don't do that. I've done my farm. I donated it. I didn't sell it at all. I did donate it. And, of course, there was no money involved. But it's firmly protected. I think the idea of this public comment was to encourage the commissioners to vote or not to vote in favor of these two amendments. I am encouraging you to vote for them as a property owner and as a citizen of Berry County. So,
I have a few questions. When we were talking about Ingham County and you said that they have an obligation to protect that easement, and then later you said Ingham agreed, did they have to do it or did they agree?
I guess I'm not following the context.
were talking about the easement and that this guy wanted to put up these solar things, and you said that Ingham County had agreed to take its coal.
Did
I misunderstand?
Yes, no, I'm sorry if I was not clear with that. No.
Oh, okay.
No. We are not going to court. It potentially could, but.
And what about these programs, preservation programs at township level?
Sure.
Because, I mean, they're really number one on the ground to their residents.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Right. And there's quite a few of them. Macomb County actually is one of the first ones that did a township program where they did an MOU, a memorandum of understanding between three or four of the townships, and went together to create their own program because they couldn't get their county to do it, and so they did it themselves. And now they're eligible for state and federal funding as well.
And they talked about the ag residential.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about rural residential? How does that impact the open space?
Sure. Well, when we talk about the terms rural residential and ag residential, they're just really terms. What's critical are the densities that are allowed within those terms. And that can vary from zoning jurisdiction to zoning jurisdiction. So, you know, townships that do their own zoning may have a different definition of what rural residential is and what ag residential is. So for the purposes of this program, they're not going to have much impact, whether it's a rural or a rural ag. It's really not going to have much. And what we're concerned about is agriculture in general.
And the other question I have written down here is if they preserve their land, okay, and we talked about cell towers, we talked about mining, we talked about all that kind of stuff. What about hunting leases?
Sure.
They can.
Oh, for sure. Yes. In Kent County, in fact, we give points for those that participate with the Hunter Access Program, the Federal Hunter Access Program.
That's a little different than leasing your land out, you know, to somebody from Wayne,
mm-hmm.
the Detroit area,
mm-hmm.
and come up and...
Sure.
I mean, where they're paying. I mean, I lost hunting rights on a farm that I was a friend of family, but the people from Detroit.
Yeah. Well, we actually had one of the
you couldn't pass it down. You couldn't pass it down.
Sure.
It was that amount of money. So.
Sure. We actually had one of the farms that was preserved with a state easement actually took a portion of the area around his creek and dedicated it to pheasant habitat, put in a lot of pheasant habitat, and he would have organized hunts on his farm, and it was all a preserved farm. So that was fine. Yes.
Going back into PA 116,
sure.
Reading through the Act, they've got conservation easement donations, agriculture preservation fund, local and open space easements for temporary restrictions, designated open space easements, permanent easements. There's already a lot of provisions in PA 116.
Mm-hmm.
So if it already exists on both a local and a state level, explain to me what we're doing, I guess.
Sure, differently.
Differently.
Yeah.
Why do we need to, why do we need to go into the detail of changing the farmland and creating the open space?
Sure, good question. So there's two types of covenants that we can do in Michigan. There's temporary covenants and there's permanent covenants. Each of them can be termed with the word easement. So you can have temporary easements and you can have permanent easements. PA 116 are temporary covenants. They are temporary easements. You can enter in for a minimum of 10 years, a maximum of 99 years. And in exchange, you receive tax credits, essentially. And you have to reach a formula with your household income exceeds 3.5% of your taxes, exceeds 3.5% of your household income, you're eligible for tax credit. There is no payment, essentially, exchanged.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about are permanent covenants. These are perpetual conservation easements that are closed based on the fair market value of that easement and are perpetually stated on the deed. So they're very similar. One is temporary, one is permanent.
99 years is a long time.
A long time. And when Snyder was toying with getting rid of PA 116, I think everybody upped for 99 years.
Okay. I mean, we see a lot of PA 116 farmland preservation come through already.
Yep. A great program. It's, so that you know that you may have some time. If you've got a 50-year easement, maybe you want to start building blocks around that so that you can have that transition to permanent when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So they work well together. Yes.
You didn't say that the time, 7-year period of time?
That's the payback provision.
That's payback.
Yes.
And if you got your PA-116,
116. Yep. You're obligated to pay back the last 7 years.
If you're in it for 10 years and you opt to get out to sell your land for development or whatever, then you owe back 7 years. And that money is what has traditionally been has funded the money at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
That comes back in the preserve fund.
Okay.
You had a second.
Yeah, I got a couple. So same thing with the designated open space easements that are already exist under PA-116.
Yep.
So we can do some of these things already.
Temporarily.
Yeah. For up to 99 years. Okay, so we already have that through the state. And some of these mentioned permanent restrictions between land and state. I mean, it's pretty complicated to digest it all. But, okay, so, and that was my question. The second thing is one of the discussions we're having a lot in Berry County right now is a housing shortage.
Sure.
So it seems to make sense that there are places where you want sprawl to go to,
mm-hmm.
and there are places that you probably don't that are perfect for open space.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me how these ordinances work with our local units of planning and zoning.
Sure.
So we're doing it in the right areas.
Sure.
And someone doesn't say we're going to take 300 acres out of M37, where it's a place you probably want development versus where you don't.
Right. I love this conversation because, in fact, I'm a planner by trade, and I think talking more about how we can create incentives for good development is so critical. Where do we want our development to go? Too many times we get reactive to zoning or to zoning changes instead of being proactive and taking a planning approach and saying, this is where we want our development to go. But the way that this mechanism is nice is because it's permanent. And that's really critical. So planning and zoning and planning commissions are incredibly important, but they can change. Temperaments can change. Goals can change. So when the intent of one board is to zone something for agricultural, 5 years later, when a developer comes in and asks for a rezoning, the intent of that board 5 years from now may change, and they may allow that rezoning to occur. With a permanent conservation easement, it forces that body to say, these areas are where we want preservation to occur. We're going to start pushing development back into our urban areas where we have the services and the infrastructure to support it. So we want to keep the money in our pockets instead of sending it out to these rural areas.
How do our local units of government with planning and zoning interact with this either open space or farmland preservation so they work together versus them getting a notice that, hey, we're taking 300 acres out of here or 50 acres
sure.
out of here? How do those two communicate and work together?
And they need to. They most definitely need to. So for every easement that we move forward in the application process, the township has to sign off on it being preserved. So let's say that the township has an area that they're planning to run sewer and water out in this area, and there's a 300-acre farm. They put their application in, and the community's already invested the money to make that a development project. They have to sign off on us preserving that farm, and they may not. And if that's the case, then we can't move any further with our conservation easement.
So the township or the local units of government do have some input as to what can and can't be.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I would hope that the program and this board would communicate with them and have some landowner workshops and some educational sessions, and then also to work with the planning commission and say, listen, we've got, 10 or 15 applications in this area. It's a really strong agricultural area. Might be better to try and put some stronger agricultural zoning in that area, and let's talk about what we can do to put some of the pressure back in these urban areas. And hopefully they have that kind of robust discussion, because too many times they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when the rezoning comes up, and we're all, what do we do now?
Okay, that is very good to know.
Yeah.
And finally, when we go right back to the amendments for the Berry County Farmland Preservation Ordinance, can you summarize the changes in that for me quickly?
Sure. So the Farmland Preservation one, essentially the changes that we're looking to do are streamlining the process. So in there you had provisions for the Planning Commission review. You had, there was a few other bodies that were going to be allowed to give approval. I can tell you based on experience, the amount of red tape and paperwork it takes to finagle you went through the bureaucratic system with these is a lot. And the less amount of people to give approval is better. My suggestion was the Planning Commission, and I think this goes along with what we were just talking about, needs to have a seat at that board so that they can be taking back to the Planning Commission what the Ag Board is talking about, and then the Ag Board can be learning about what the Planning Commission is talking about. But I don't believe it's necessary to have each application and easement going through the planning department for approval. It's just going to bottleneck your system. So have somebody serving on your board that can give that input and then move it through. The other big change was the name. The Agricultural Promotion Board, it's really, really critical. As we've seen and how confusing and the nuances and the moving parts you have with this program, it's so, so critical to say exactly who you are. We are not the Agricultural Promotion Board. And when I say me, I'm associating myself with the Farmland Preservation Board. We're not the Agricultural Promotion Board. Farm Bureau does a great job of that. MSU Extension does a great job of that. The purpose of this body is to purchase conservation easements. It is not to promote agriculture. That may come inherently with what we're doing with the workshop, but it is not what we're doing. So to me, that was when I first looked at it, that was the first thing that I thought needed to change. And then the second one was simply just to streamline some of the processes.
Okay. So that's on the farmland preservation.
That's the farmland one. Yeah.
And then the open space was pretty much self-explanatory, under 40,
absolutely.
under 49% tillable.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Then it qualifies for open space.
And what Heather was talking about, so Berry County has done a very good job with that original ordinance. And aside from just a few tweaks with the streamlining the process and the name, you have a really good structure. And so there's really no point in reinventing the wheel with the open space ordinance. You're just referring to a lot of the structure and the processes that are already in place in the agriculture, the farmland one, and just establishing that we're going to do this for open space.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one board oversees both. They oversee the selection criteria of both. They oversee the purchase of both or the acquisition of both. Both programs require Board of Commissioner approval before any easement purchase and the ranking. So it gives you a really nice intersection between your Board of Commissioners and the Conservation Easement Board.
And by passing one or both of these tonight, that gives our new board the opportunity to apply for some of the government grants or money that will be available.
Yes.
To do that. Okay.
And there is a time, I mean, we do have to be somewhat cognizant of our time. We're looking at an October application cycle for the state money. The state money is looking at a 75-25 match, which is very significant. So if we want to be in line and prepared to receive some of those funds, we do have to get moving on a few things before we can be eligible. So that's kind of the timing of this was important.
Okay. My questions are answered. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think we've heard a lot of positive discussion tonight. And just to see the diverse political geography of counties that have adopted this, from Washtenaw to Kent County, which have very different politics, it's clear that it's working up there. So I think this is something that we should move forward on. It's low risk for the county. We're not dedicating any new dollars, but we're kind of renewing our commitment. So I would make a motion to recommend to the Board of Commissioners approval of the amendments to the Berry County Farmland Preservation Ordinance.
Support.
It's been moved and seconded to recommend to the Board of Commissioners the approval of the amendments to the Berry County Farmland Preservation Ordinance. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Well, it's the same, he had recognized me, but I had a question about the board, the makeup of the board,
yes.
Because it's very ag weighted.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem.
It actually, when we're talking about developing a system to score farmland, you need to have people boots on the ground, so to speak. So you need to have individuals who understand agriculture, understand production agriculture, and actually can give a very realistic view of what farming is. Because if they're going to be saying yes to this person and no to this person, they definitely need to have some background in agriculture. Now, saying that, farmers obviously are great agricultural proponents, but I think there are a plethora of other people that do represent agricultural interests and may not actually be farmers. On the Ingham County Board, we have one that is a farmer. We have one that is a retired ag economist from the department or from MSU Extension. And then we have an extension agent, all representing agricultural interests.
But there is a county ordinance, and there are other people than ag interests that live in the county.
Say that again.
It is a county ordinance.
Yes.
And there are other people in the county that have interests that will happen in the county that aren't ag residents.
Oh, absolutely. So it's a 7-member board.
Right.
3 of the members represent agriculture.
1 conservation.
1 represents conservation. 1 represents real estate and development. 1 represents your planning commission. 1 represents local government. So,
well, that's a non-voting person, right?
Oh, local. That's county. Yes. So you will have 1 county commissioner liaison that is a non-voting, but is still seated at. So you do have a very well-rounded board to serve. So and it's a 3-4. It's a 3 ag, 4 non-ag.
No, but you're talking about conservation easements, so you got to really throw them in on the ag side.
But that's just the legal term for it, is conservation. And if I know that you're the representative on the conservation district. However, when the conservation district started, it was the conservation of agricultural properties.
Correct.
That helped us prevent erosion. It helped plant wind blocks. It did a lot of things.
It was more farm than it was.
And it has morphed into more
natural
resources. So
they have a pretty big.
I would arguably say that the farmers in Berry County own more property in the county that they can serve their natural resources than any other landowner in the county, except for maybe the state of Michigan, who owns the game area. I mean, farmers in this county take care of their crop ground. They try to mitigate erosion. They try to mitigate wind erosion, water erosion. They constantly are working to preserve their property. So they are the best ones to say this is the best property to conserve. Versus somebody who doesn't have a clue about why this creek runs this way or why this tree is planted there.
Wouldn't
it
be the Board of Commissioners job to make sure they put somebody on there that...
It would.
When you say they...
But how many times have we seen people get appointed to boards who are only appointed because they have a bone to pick with somebody about that? I mean, we've seen it at Shelton Park. We've seen it at the Parks and Rec. We've seen it at every board. Somebody tries to get on a board to pick a bone. And this is an ag preservation ordinance. And I think farmers are the best ones to be able to defend why they pick one property over another that needs to be preserved. So I do not have a problem with it being heavily weighted towards agriculture. And I also don't have a problem with having the commissioner be a liaison to this. Because essentially,
they get a vote at the county board.
They will get a vote at the county board.
I get that.
So that I do not have an issue with that. And I think it's important to have farmers be the ones to decide whether this one should be more heavily open space, this one should be farmland, and they should be able to pick the one that we think this is our best foot forward to get that federal grant or that state grant. I think some people just don't get farm ground. They just don't understand. They don't understand what we do or why we do it.
Yeah. I've been on councils and school boards and commissions and all that, and whenever remember we did a survey, and this is going back 35 years. They all wanted to see the rural flavor of our county to stay the same or somewhat close to that. They liked the rural flavor of it being in Barry County, and that's drawn a lot of people here because of that. So I would encourage that we allow that to happen through this.
My statement is I don't like to see a county commissioner on any board that might be spending taxpayers' money not have a vote. But this is not just against farmland preservation. I don't think it should be that way on DHHS or conservation. If we're going to waste our time to be on there, it'd be best to have a vote.
Or not, go ahead.
That'd be fine.
Let me change that.
I don't remember.
Especially because we fund those programs.
No, it is still on there that you're a liaison. You're not voting.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were. I meant.
We had a lot of discussion about that specific one.
I was referring to John's comment because we do fund those other programs, but we don't have a vote on the board. Mm-hmm. But the county funds them.
There's taxpayers in the
But that's what I was referring
to. The taxpayer should have a commissioner to grab a hold of and say, listen, I know it's going to come back to the board. But that's just my thoughts. And it isn't just farmland preservation.
I understand. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the question before the board is to approve the amendments to the Barry County Farmland Preservation Ordinance. We can do a roll call, but it's not.
Are we spending
money?
Or are we moving,
just moving it to the board? To approve, I guess I can't talk tonight. So we'll send this to the board next week. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
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 The motion is approved.
Madam Chair, I move to recommend the Board of Commissioners approval of the attached Barry County Open Space Preservation Ordinance.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the attached Barry County Open Space Preservation. Moved and seconded to move to see, I don't have my script tonight, so I'm tongue-tied.
We're doing good.
So we're going to move to approve this and send it on to the board next week. Is there any discussion? Sure. We've been talking about everything else, Jim. Go ahead.
I think it'd be great because I did the open space because when I was commissioner, basically we set out a set of standards that we want to draw people here because of recreational, fishing, hunting, agriculture, the way this county's been for a lot of years. Back when Grand Rapids started coming this way, we thought, I know for my part I'd like to keep it the way it's been for 100 years and have it that way for 100 years going forward. Open space and ag together, I think that'd be a great thing. A couple things that didn't come up in the presentation. One, is there any research, like you said, that basically you're selling off your development rights. I didn't see you where it showed that, anytime you take something off the table, like development rights of, you said 7,000 acres, how much did the remaining property go up? I mean, when you take half the property off the sale, the other half goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even see that, and I don't know what people think about that, but it does push that, so you're not really going to lose that revenue for people that are concerned about the tax base and the revenues from sales. The developers are going to have to pay more. That's going to drive your tax. Second of all, nobody mentioned the fact that with this easement, as far as I understand, when I was on board for 4 years, you still have the nobody can just walk onto your property.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was a big one. A lot of these conservation easements are great, but a lot of them have holes where anybody can drift out. And I'm not that way.
No.
That's
no.
All.
No. Yeah, I think retaining the private property rights is big. Important.
Is there any other discussion? Yes, sir.
Scott Hickerson, I'm for the Open Spaces Act. That's why I'm here. I actually had bought three private organizations. The problem is due to, not that they're not interested, but due to staffing monitoring restrictions, their threshold is far greater amount of acres than what I have. The reason they were interested, if I had enough acres, is because the Little Cedar Lake is actually at the head of the Cedar Lake watershed. It's all spring-fed. There's actually three large springs on my property. So it protects the water. And what we have to realize is 25% of our nation's water comes from the woods. So when you protect open spaces, you protect natural areas, watershed areas, you're actually protecting your drinking water, which has become almost a nightly story on the news. So that's an additional benefit to the county is all the natural resources we have is the vast amount of water we have, and it's an opportunity for us smaller landowners that want to protect that resource, because they would just be split back up our tenants, like, you know, with houses. It's a crucial area for the water.
Yes, sir. I'm on what is now the Agriculture Promotion Board. I just wanted to say that. But we live on the southern end of the county, my husband and I, and we live on the Prairieville Creek, which is one, and we have all many of the springs that feed Gull Lake right on our property, and we would like to preserve it. And we have all sorts of wildlife, and we have hunters on our land, and that's another reason why we'd like to preserve it. So without this open space ordinance, we probably wouldn't have a chance at it. But we feel like we have one of the prime areas that's still
beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it's pristine, and the wildlife in that area is amazing. And I know the neighbors, part of it's been preserved on the other side already. So I really strongly encourage the board.
You had 2 dozen deer grazing right outside your house just Tuesday afternoon.
I know. There's turkeys and there's everything. We've got a badger down there.
Yes, sir.
I strongly urge you pass it also. We live in the Mud Creek watershed. We've got a couple of lakes on the property with wildlife. One's not in the crater.
Where's Mud Creek? What township?
It runs from Sunfield.
Oh.
It ends right up in Thorn Apple River.
Oh, okay.
It starts at Sunfield Township, comes all through Woodland.
Oh, Woodland, okay.
M66 over by Woodbury.
Oh, I know it is now. Yeah, now that you...
That area that I...
Right where you grew up.
Yeah.
And my 2 cents in on this is many people, and I come from a big farm family, a farm that is still being farmed near Marshall, a big farm, and so I have a lot of background in agriculture, is that the families, I know my family, people want to preserve their land. They want to know that that land is going to live on for future generations. And like, things change, you know, 20 years from now, things are different, people are different. But it's nice to be able to know that you've done something to, you know, help the world, you know.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the question before the committee is to approve to send the Berry County Open Space Preservation Ordinance to the Board of Commissioners. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Or this, nay?
Nay.
So it's 5-2 again, motion carried. All right. Public comment. 5-2.
Yeah. You said nay.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I voted no.
Yes.
Yes, I voted no. Okay.
We have a no and a nay.
So, we're limited public comment. At this time, any member of the public wishes to address the committee. Please take your name for the record if you do. Yes, Gordon.